Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints with me and Maniac. And obviously, in theory, it's the off-season. By the way, I actually do like that that happened sort of colloquially. Like, once people realise we have these player breaks, people just decide to start calling it a season. And since we have two per year, I actually think it even works quite well, because to me, it is a way better way mentally to frame like how you're splitting the year up. And I actually like, by the way, Maniac, that people finally have started to do this. I think the first time from my remember it was actually in 2022, if you remember when Phase 1 Cologne just before the player break, and like we ended the season on a high. And I remember even Carrigan referencing in the interview, I think, when he won, like, you know, it's good to end the season with like a win at the big event. The reason why I think it's good is because, like, I also do think the flaw we had before was obviously we were just working off calendar years before, of, like, this year, this team. But I actually think if you look at it, like, for things like eras, and, you know, if you think about the fact that each season can only have one major, I think in a way it actually makes more sense to talk about seasons. I think it's actually quite a sort of like appropriate interval. Like, I feel like it feels a bit more comfy than just like whatever we had before, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it helps like hyping up tournaments and sort of evaluating them adjustingly, you know, like London, for example, in isolation might not be the most important tournament in the calendar, but because it is what actually closes the summer season, then you can start to really ante up like the stakes for all the teams and what is that going to mean going into the player break. So I think it's pretty cool. I also think that considering we have what I would consider to be one of the most open year of Counter-Strike in recent history. Sure. There's like teams dominating, and even like the three-man race for the best player in the world and all of that. The fact that you can actually sort of categorize like the first season, what has happened, who is actually the leaders in some of these races, I think it makes it really cool. And I'm just going to put it personally, that break also feels great to take a breather and really relax a little bit, make some space in your mind about, okay, what are we going to entering into the next season? What are the key sort of storylines? And as we are starting to see as well in the medias, it's time for, you know, shit to go down. Yeah. Like, changes are happening and teams are making decisions. So I absolutely welcome that little break.
By the way, I'm also with you on that last point. I also think it helps for teams, because the one thing I've always thought was messy in Counter-Strike especially is, even though I don't like the League of Legends circuit, it's got a lot of problems in my opinion with how it's implemented, it is good that it has that sports element though, where you know when the actual off-season is. And so if people don't know, all the contracts are designed to run out when the season ends in League of Legends. So it means that essentially not only does my player know when he might be on the chopping block, but more importantly, like, that's when we all know to go and get the next player. It's kind of almost like a designated area. I also think, by the way, if you work as talent, literally, this is where fans won't understand that even talent can be entitled. Because back in the day, I remember, I'll use little Moses. If we all love Moses, and surely Moses can't get mad if you call him out a little bit, right? Even Moses back in the day used to say that thing that we all used to, of like, and we're overworked, there's too many events. And what he really meant was, not like, I'm being forced to do all these events, because obviously he was freelance. Like, he could have just turned down the next two events he wanted. But what he really meant was, no, I want no one to be able to do events for a set period of time, so that I don't have to worry about I'm turning them down and losing my gig. But I also get a break like the players. And in fact, it's even better, isn't it, Maniac? It's like, even though everyone's joking and memeing about it, bro, if you work as talent or in this industry, it's actually beautiful to open HL TV and see no games whatsoever. That's a brilliant feeling, because the worst thing, as we're alluding to, by the way, is you could always have taken a break before or not get hired for the event. But that wouldn't be the same break, though, would it, mate? Like, when you're on that beach and you look on your phone, you'd see a news on Twitter, of course you do. You get drawn back into it, don't you?
You know, I've had these, like, a few days off. Like, usually what I used to do is I used to take 1 week vacation before a major. Like, I would do that because I would make sure that I would show up at the major, like, fully refreshed and ready. But it would always be some degree of Counter-Strike happening. So I'm kind of out there under the sun. I have my iPad. I'm kind of looking at the score and see what's happening. I can't really let go.
Sure.
Because then I'm thinking, oh, my God, I have to be ready for the major. This break, for me, is an actual moment of legitimately ignoring Counter-Strike for a while and allowing myself to settle and then dive right back into it. And I think, of course, it's a little bit similar to the players in terms of, hey, you have to perform, you have to do your best at your job, and it's also healthy to have moments where, okay, let's take a deep breath, and we dive right back into Counter-Strike without having to fight the demons of, like, oh my God, you should really work now. If you don't know about all these tournaments, someone's going to replace you. Like, that's part of the talent life too.
Or even if you're just trying to, for real, like, relax on a recliner on a beach somewhere. Like I say, you're on your phone, and then there's a tweet like, oh my God, did you see that Donk 1v2? Well, no, I have to, don't I? Like, what, am I going to miss the Donk 1v2? You know, it's hard to disconnect. So that's why, in a way, like little kids, we just need the adults to come in and go, right, no more PlayStation, and then no one can play, if you know what I mean. Like, we actually, in a sad way, we all do need that, guys. It's a bit like thing, which I've always made fun of, but I get it. You know that thing where, like, people who work in esports will be like, oh, I'm burnt out, so I'm taking a week off. But then my joke is, all they do for a week is, like, stream themselves playing the game and eating pizzas. It's like, That's not really much of a break for your body, mate. Like, if anything, you'll be more wrecked after that week of that. But I get they mean, like, you know, mentally a break of not having the pressure of the game. One thing I will say, though, on the season thing, though, it's just an obvious thing. But if you know the industry, the way our industry seems to work is, it's like, I'll give credit, people like ESL and CS in general, I do feel like good ideas eventually percolate out and, like, affect rankings and tournament formats. Like, it's one of the reasons why I actually do feel somewhat satisfied in CS compared to when I work in League Maniac. In League, I can complain about something, and it might take 10 years for them to do, like, double a limb. So at that point, I don't feel like it was me that had anything to do with it. I think they just, through their own circuitous method, came to a similar conclusion. I don't think they were listening to me for 10 years, then decided to do it. Differences in CS, if you have a good idea, actually, once enough people sort of think it through, they do tend to get employed. Like, I always tell people, it's the reason why I don't criticise ESL beyond the Saudi thing. I actually think the tournaments, they run a fabulous style. The circuit's very well done. I think, by the way, they actually have the best invite system. There seems the most fair based on the rankings. Like, even some of the seeding things they've tried over the years have been quite cool. Like that one where they had players years ago rank themselves. They've done lots of great things. So here's another suggestion I have for the industry. It just seems obvious. Now that we've got these seasons, just make the season end on either a major or like a kind of Eats or a Cologne type event. Just make it end on a high. That's the only thing I would say, Minnie. I don't like... Because that were you.
Decided. Well, no, is that not already the case now? Or was that not going to be the case?
We just had blasts at the end of the season. I mean, like, no, I mean, like end
in the future,
now.
I mean, you know?
Oh, is it determined is that... I might have said that.
I think I was... Okay, so don't take my word for it. Maybe there's going to be some, like, necessary recheck after that. But I do think that moving forward... I mean, in December, I think Shanghai is going to close the season. And I do believe for 2025...
Oh, is it implied that from now on it'll end on a major?
Yes.
If so, then that is perfect. Because I do think... Think about this. That would even work better for what we're implying about how it's going to change the transfer market. The most perfect time for everyone to reevaluate is after the major. Yes. So I actually think, and also if you look at the new circuit that it's inferred is coming in the future years where there might be no RMRs and maybe it is just what I want, like the circuit performance gets you into the major. In that world, you also wouldn't want it to be where like a major is really early on. You want people to have the whole cycle to perform with the five-man lineup. Like actually, I think a very positive thing of that people missed Maniac is, not only can people not just qualify to a major with a random team, but it means that you actually have to like take that exact lineup or roughly that lineup and put work in the scene. You don't just come to the major out of nowhere. Like we're going to know who these teams are roughly. So I think that's a good thing.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, I have a great interest in tennis and I do think we are getting closer to like the tennis type circuit now for 2025 onwards, which is, yes, there's going to be a plethora of tournaments and that in itself will kind of spawn some logistical issues and maybe in terms of viewership and viewer fatigue. I acknowledge all of that. I don't think it's perfect, but I do like the idea that players and teams will have to make decisions and we'll have to plan, okay, this is how many points I would like to get from that moment on so I can get my invite to Wimbledon and Roland Garros or whatever the hell, so I can be in line for the major. I'm going to have to go to this event. These are the results I need to have. I like that. And I think it's going to allow for teams, if they do it cleverly, because I think the silly way to do it would just be to go every tournament all the way, all the time, until you completely destroy yourself. I think it would be the silly way. But if you do it cleverly, that would allow for like different set of teams at different tournaments that have different objectives, and every now and then you get to have these immense clashes that you can actually really hype the shit out of, not having FaZe Vitality 7 tournaments in a row because maybe they have slight differences in the calendar they want to put forth until we get to the major. I like that. It's always been like that in tennis. You have some tournaments that are inevitable if you want to rack up the points, like the Masters 1000, something like that. Cool. But when it comes to the smaller tournaments, they make choices. They decide, how long do I want to invest on grass? How long do I invest on clay? Where do I need to go? When do I need to go to be ready for... I like that. I like this approach, and I'm looking forward to seeing it applied to Counter-Strike.
Let's get into some of the actual CS stuff now. One thing I thought we could talk about is this, Maniac. So people know the news now that Cadian's getting kicked out of Team Liquid / benched, which means he's kicked out and they're just waiting to sell him guys. Like that. But I hope in the Monday people don't know that like the majority of benchings aren't real benchings in the sports. And so you're never coming back from that bench. Or you're not just benched temporarily while, you know, they like test you out. It's just bench just means you're going to be sold basically. So basically that is happening if people don't know. And I do have some behind the scenes info, but obviously as usual, you have to be delicate with what you let out. So I'll tell you is, I just heard basically some things which actually go in line with some things I'd heard about Cadian from Heroic, and I thought it could spawn quite an interesting discussion about in-game leaders. Because one thing I'm getting really bored of as someone who's just been around the game for a long time is, to me, in-game leader has to be treated a bit like manager / coach in football or sports, right? Which is, we have to acknowledge that it's not like if you're good, then the team is always really good and you win. Like, those things don't all necessarily go together. In fact, the reason why I bring up that example is, I hope people who followed sports understand that you can be a fabulous coach, and sometimes either you've just been there for too long and eventually it's run its course, like those players aren't interested anymore, you don't have the, maybe the new crop, you didn't pick the right players, so you have to move on. Or sometimes it's just the wrong mix for you. Like, the obvious example in sports would be, let's say you're like a really defensive coach, and then you get a team where the team's built with all offensive players and stars. I mean, the joke would be England, if people know in the Euros right now, everyone's complaining, even though they think we have a really good team, because people think like the manager misuses the players or he doesn't understand how to best implement them. But that doesn't mean, that's not the greatest example there, because people think this manager does suck, but in theory that doesn't have to mean you suck as a manager. Maybe it means you're better suited with a different project. So I say all that to say this, right? As far as I know, the problems that you might find out in the coming months that Cadian had in Team Liquid actually aren't that dissimilar from the reasons why it sounds like Heroic broke up. But this is where I want to get into this topic, because I think now, sadly, Cadian's stock is going to drop a lot. And I've heard already, by the way, some really depressing... This is worse than the Blame F or Maniac. I've heard, like, Cadian might not even be getting into, like, the Blame F level of teams, which is like, what? Because obviously his problem is he has to be both IGL and ARPA, which already you're narrowing the Venn diagram quite a lot there. And then add in, now there's this rep of, like, no one knows if he can do it without Danish players. So, unfortunately, that is kind of a killer, which is a bummer if you think about it, bro. Because if you went back to when he left Heroic, in your brain, suddenly he could go anywhere. Couldn't he seem super eligible? So what I want to get into is this topic, right? Which is, this is why I think this is a great example to give, but we can have the more abstract discussion. You've been in plenty of teams. We've all watched lots of different Counter-Strike styles over the years. The reason why I want to give that example is, I actually don't think this proves Cadian sucks now, but was awesome in Heroic. From what I've heard, Maniac, it sounds to me like I could explain it this way. In Heroic, none of those were famous players when he joined that team. The joke is he was the biggest name. In fact, even in their team, he was one of the better players. He was like sort of the second or third star usually most of the time, right? He obviously was able to call around himself, but the difference is that is very different buy-in when those are nobody players, Maniac. When you are the big dog, you're the leader, you're the one with all experience, they're going to follow, they're going to do the things. If you ever watch that style, I actually think Heroic proved Cadian's style clearly does work. Like, you could see in that team, I thought Maui did a brilliant job explaining it on Reddit. It was so obvious in that team, mate, that when Cadian said jump, they just said how high and did it. You know what I mean? That's the old analogy goes. No one was going, I'm not sure if that's the right move. Well, I don't know. I think I want to lurk on this. You could tell, like, on CT rotations, people just instantly did whatever he said. They just trusted the call. On T side, he clearly was allowed to just make mid-round calls, and they would just break the playbook, and but sometimes for himself, for someone else. The problem is this, as far as I know, he tried to do that in Team Liquid. It just didn't work. It was a different set of personalities. Maybe the buy-in wasn't all there. By the way, some of those players are bigger than Cadian. Bro, Twist has won everything in the game. He's won 2 Grand Slams in a major. Like, that's not a young player who's going to go, well, if you say so, boss, that's someone who might say, like, I don't know if I like what we're doing on these two. You know, or you know what? Actually, cancel that call. I'm not going in right now. There might be a world you can imagine where you're calling the same thing, essentially, but the setup is different. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because I feel like on this topic, one, people do treat it, sadly. I know my boy Alexi had this for a long time, and he just won the major. People do treat it like, if you don't succeed with that group, you're just shit as an IGL, and sort of you should fit to them or something, which I think is only like half. I think you can fit some things, but you have to stick with your strengths too. And then obviously there's a bigger discussion we can also have about things like structure and how much should you have, etc. Because I feel like people also have made a weird mistake on that, Maniac, where because there's a lot of really great teams with the best players in the world that play loose, I think people think playing loose is like the ultimate style now, whereas like, it's funny because if you just go back in time 5 years, we all said you should play like a Astralis, be super tactical. So come on, give me some thoughts on this topic, because obviously people are going to obsess over this Cadian thing for a while. So what are your thoughts?
So let's start off with saying I agree with like his credit going downhill, and that's very unfortunate, because it's one of these situations where unless we hear about it in interviews in extenso and different players come through and they tell and they speak about their experiences, we're going to make a bunch of assumptions about actually happened. So I think that is in itself extremely dangerous, because we don't exactly know. Irremediably, it's going to lower his credit. And I don't really know how far down the ladder he's going to have to go to now buy himself another chance in a project like that. That's step one. Step two is, I think you and I, we discussed a whole lot when this Team Liquid was put together. And we try to really highlight how much of a challenge it was going to be.
Yeah, we did.
Different philosophies sort of into the mix and creating a Counter-Strike that is coherent.
By the way, if people go back, that might even be like the first or second episode, Maniac. I think we did a very good job, because if I agree with you, we characterized it as like, it's very hype project, could be awesome, but it's really ambitious. Yeah. Like, it's a massive gamble. Yeah, that's for sure.
100%. So the way I look at it, because you were doing the comparison with Heroic and how they were like lower profiles players. And then obviously in Liquid, you have people who have a greater experience. I think what it really does is this difference of status is going to dictate the tolerance that a player will have if he's dissatisfied with his leader. And I think this is what's going to be sort of factor in mainly. If you are kind of a nobody and your leader has a bigger an aura or a bigger aura than you, you might have an inkling to reach and go in his direction a little bit more. So, you know what, actually, maybe we don't see eye to eye, but I trust this guy. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's got more experience than me. Maybe he's right. I'll get outside my comfort zone and let's try and make it happen. I think if you are at the very top of the ladder and if you are a Twist-like character who's accomplished so much, you might be quicker to get to the point where you say, wait, hold on a minute. Like, I don't agree with any of this. And sure. In fact, my experience proved that any of it is correct. Like, I've won differently. I know, and this doesn't fit me. So what it does, it really shortcuts the period of time where you can be dissatisfied and not do anything about it. But there are a few issues with that. The first issue that I have with this whole situation is that when you put a project together like that, you would hope that there would have been conversations preceding that to make sure that to an extent you want to play the same CS. But it doesn't have to be completely extended, but you would have an idea how you imagine a team is going to work out, how much space you're going to give to players, how much space you're going to take yourself. This gives me the feeling that this wasn't really done, or it was glossed over, or not actually delicately enough. Like, just now realizing, hold on a minute. It's like basically just getting with a new relationship immediately without even just trying to get to know each other a little bit and see, okay, this is how you work, this is how I work, where are boundaries, how does that work? It feels like that should have been done before. But in any case, once you put these elements together and that team seemingly doesn't work, then it's not just about whether Cadian's Counter-Strike fits the team. It's about their ability to talk about it and figure like a compromise that works for everybody. And if they don't, then it's going to be confrontational. And if it's confrontational, then it's going to be who's got the bigger voice, the bigger tenure, the bigger veterancy. And then they eventually will sort of win. But the problem is, as soon as I start using words like win, there's no more cooperation anymore. Like, the team is over. It's just a matter of who actually gets to keep the jersey on their shoulders and who gets the boot. And at that game, if you are against Twist, which again, I'm not saying this is what happened.
No, just speculating.
Hypothetically speculating, if you are going up against a man like Twist, it's really unfortunate for you because he is going to get the benefit of that. Oh, he's going to get the priority, and that makes sense. So to me, this is more so a failure of cooperation and trying to find a compromised way to play Counter-Strike that fits people. It's either that, or it's a lack of due diligence as the project was being put together to realize at that point in time, like, wait a minute, you and I, we don't want to play the same Counter-Strike at all. Like, this isn't going to work. So it's one of the other. And unfortunately for Cadian, I do think he will bear the lion's share of that failure as the leader. Of course, it comes with the territory. But unfortunately for him, I think people are going to be very quick to just dismiss it as a failure on his side. And they're just going to say, well, you know what? Actually, Cadian's a shit IGL. Bye. End of topic.
Yes.
Whereas I think it's much more complex than that.
It's why I also think if you are Cadian, man alive, it never comes easy for you, mate. Think about the slog he had in his career, Maniac, to get to the point that he got into Heroic and it all got awesome and everything got really good and he was at the top of the world. And then not only now is his stock at the lowest, but now I'll tie in the joke I made on past ones. It's no longer a joke. Now, also, that whole drama, like, everyone was on his side in the Stabby drama. First of all, no one cares about that now because he's just got, now he's a Team Liquid player. No one thinks him as the Heroic person guy anymore. And even worse, now it looks like Stabby were right, doesn't it? Like, Device looks like a better version of Cadian. So, like, the problem, if you're Cadian, it couldn't be worse right now. The timing couldn't be worse that it goes like this, you know? So, yeah. Well, here's one thing I would say, right? What I don't think people realize is, I think here's the fairest way to frame this, because I'm a bit torn on this. I was also very hyped about this project. I'm obviously friends with people like Zeus. I actually like most of the players in the team. I think they are good players. I think this was a potential super team they were trying to create. It was a very ambitious project. If you remember, the two projects I said were the most ambitious was this and Na'Vi, because they're just such a crazy international squad, you know, disparate elements being brought in. You've got like strong people, but they're massive voices. Everyone's got to buy in and stuff. So my problem, I would say, goes like this. I actually, if I look from different perspectives, I think it's totally reasonable that they break up in this wave and potentially collapse in. Like, for example, if you're Cadian, look, I still think even if you're Cadian, the team wasn't quite good enough for you. Like, I don't think Liquid was bad. I actually think the difference, I noticed Liquid and Falcons tend to get treated the same way. Like, they're both failed super team. Falcons is way worse than Team Liquid was, guys. Like, Falcons, you watch the game and it's bad. Like, Team Liquid, they just had a bunch of results. And by the way, they had loads of big games. They lost, like, you know, 13-11 on the last map, or, and they actually had, like, quite a few wins. People don't know others. You go look, they had some big teams they beat also and performed well. I think half their problem is, we talked about this in the past, because they blew all the online qualifiers. Like the first half of the lifespan of the team, they weren't even at Lands, yeah. So it felt like they'd failed already, but they actually hadn't been to Lands. When they did come to Lands, if you ever go look, they weren't bad. They actually were like almost a good team. Like, you know, they were sort of like a playoff team that go out in the first round usually, basically. And my problem is this, right? If it's a super team, that isn't good enough for anyone. But if you are people like, I mean, obviously Scholes is the obvious one. Yekindau wasn't in a great place with Liquid. No. These aren't the end of the world results. The problem is, though, forget Cadian. If you're Twists, though, or NAF, because if people don't know, people know the story that Twists could have gone to Vitality from FaZe or stayed in FaZe. He could just be in FaZe. By the way, either of these teams, you can imagine, he's getting better results, right? I've even heard it implied recently, there's worlds where people were trying to get Twists out of this team because obviously he was the guy fragging out, right? I've heard he potentially had offers, which is why I think, by the way, this mutiny has happened. That implies to me that's one of the ones where it's like either you leave or you say, here's what I need to stay, and what I need to stay is maybe a new IGL, something like that. So my problem is, if I look from Twists' perspective, think about what I just said earlier. Guys, in the last 5 years, he has won 2 Grand Slams and a major, and then even in FaZe, like bad tournament for them was second place at the end. Like for him, playoffs is already a failure if you don't make it further. Like he needs a way better team than this. So I don't hate that aspect. I do get the idea if you are Twists, you can maybe go now to Vitality and join. So you can turn around to Liquid. It's totally fair to say to them, look, since I could just go to Vitality now or a top team, either make Liquid how that it is that way or I'll leave. I think that's not unfair. I don't think that's a terrible thing to do, but from his perspective, you know.
I completely
agree. Again, speculating, assuming what I imagine is going on.
Definitely. And I was just like, when you were talking about Twist and his experience in FaZe, it made me realize something that must have been really hard for Twist to live through. So picture this. You've just played with Kerrigan, right? You've taken a while to really hit the ground running, but once you started winning, holy shit, you started winning. Like you did the Katowice Cologne duo, you had your Grand Slam, you had the major, like we found all of that success. And for all that, Kerrigan isn't the perfect specimen when it comes to Counter-Strike. You had an incredibly high standard for what your leader is capable of doing. And you found a team that was, I think FaZe will always be sort of unique in how they sort of behave as an ecosystem, like the leadership, the amount of space given to individuals when Kerrigan strikes with the decisions. Like they're pretty unique in how like independent and autonomous these are individuals, but still cohesive. So you go from this to Cadian, and this is where I'm going to be careful with my conversation. This is not to make just a one-to-one comparison and say Cadian is shit compared to Kerrigan. That's not what I'm going to do. But the thing is, you go from this to Cadian, who's coming with his experience, his baggage as an IGL in a team that was supposedly at the time Heroic, not exactly super capable of making individual decisions in high pressure moments. So Cadian, through experience and repetitions, learned that If we are going to win with this team, I better call the shit myself.
Yes.
Like this is how we're going to win. Is this perfect? Probably not. But in these moments, that's how we get the best out of the 5 players that we are. I'm going to be the main character when it comes to decision making, because admittedly, I cannot really trust some of these players in high pressure moments. So I'm going to do everything myself. And so he developed this somewhat organically, and this is somewhat an adequate response. But then when he moves in with that kind of profile into this now Liquid, which has Twist, who's living with the framed picture of Kerrigan in his heart about how Counter-Strike is supposed to be played, then you can imagine how the contrast works.
Sure.
It's like, holy shit, like how is this? And it's not to say Cadian is guilty, because he comes in with his past and his story and his experience in Counter-Strike, but Twist must be looking at it like, what is going on? This isn't Counter-Strike. This isn't how you win in Counter-Strike. This is hindering me. This is hindering us. And so you imagine that this would be an extremely frustrating process for everybody, unless they have an incredible quality of communication where they can actually work these things through. And let's just say a lot of people might be very, very good at the game. I don't know how many players are extremely good at communicating on like a more than a surface level, but actually have these like deep conversations. So this must have been like quite a clash coming in from Kerrigan, the playstyle, the success from it, to then Cadian with his baggage as a Heroic leader and then making all that work. I can see different ways that this would be complicated.
And by the way, obviously we're using Twists as an example because it's the best example of the big name player who might, like you say, his ex essentially was maybe the GOAT IGL. Like you're going to have someone pretty hard to compare them against. Like it's going to be pretty hard to live up to or fill those shoes. I will say though, like if I have to speculate, another name I'd obviously throw in the mix is Yekindau. Remember, he has his own quite strong opinions about IGLing, just tried it himself. I'm sure he has his own perspective. He's certainly not a guy shy to give his opinion based on what I've heard. But no, I thought we could expand this out a bit and have an abstract conversation because I thought thought something you nailed there at the end was really interesting to me, which is, first of all, I think fans have gone way too hard. Like, it's understandable. They have, like, a simplistic understanding of the game because they're just watching it for fun. They tend to treat this idea. They act maniac, like every team. You know, in the same way you have, like, the safety button on a gun or whatever. They act like there's a button on every team, and it just goes between two settings. It goes tactics, loose. And then you just and it's binary, and you just click it on. And if you put it on loose maniac, you just FaZe Clan, all the great FaZe Clan. Even though, as you said, by the way, I even think I've always said this joke. By the way, I've always said the greatest bait Carrigan ever did was make people think it's easy to run international teams.
I know.
Run them, and then they always are not quite as good. And my joke is because they don't have Carrigan. That's the part they miss out on. They get, you know, they get the superstar team, they get the AWPer from this place, and then they forget at the end. Yeah, the Carrigan part's quite essential. That sort of brings it all together. So in a way, it's a genius bait that he made everyone else make international teams now because they're not quite as good as his generally, right? So there's that angle. But then the other part is, so already they think like loose just means, if you notice, a fan thinks loose really is just like Nico go kill and then you just play on this side of the map, you know, which there's not even any real loose team does that, guys. Like even the loosest team of all time has like set players and fucking smoke lineups and timings and stuff. It's just more like, you know, we allow, like you said, we allow players more agency. Maybe the star can abort the call. Maybe he gets it. Maybe the lurker gets an entry actually and we switch over to his set. There's things like that, mate. And then the other part that's ridiculous though is similarly, if you flip the switch the other way, tactics, they think that means you are fully back in like 2015, like MSL, like from spawn. You're going to do this at like 139, next flash comes at 40 seconds, bomb goes down at 25. You know what I mean? They think it's like that. They think it's like, you know, it's like an old Rainbow Six tactical op game. You've like planned the whole thing out and then, you know, the reconnaissance team. And so the problem is, as you notice, they make it too extreme. Whereas I always tell people, it's like being passive and aggressive as a player. It's a spectrum, isn't it? Like if I tell you Shiro's a passive AWPer, yeah, in certain circumstances. You put him in other circumstances, by the way, he's going to fucking frag everyone. What are you talking about? You're going to re-peak into 50 people? Like, so to me, it's always a spectrum. But I think you nailed it there. To me, the problem people have is because FaZe has been one of the best teams the last few years, and Vitality as well, etc. I think people have got this notion that every elite team should all be like loose style and the stars should do it. Meanwhile, I actually think they don't even credit, like you did, that there's a role for the old structure style of Vortexes. Whereas to you and with you, the most obvious place where structure is going to help is, I always describe the metaphor of scaffolding. It's like you're putting the scaffolding, that's what the structure is, so that you can build up what you're going to do. So in this scenario, as you said, if you have inexperienced players, or even worse, by the way, players who like have skills, but they don't know who they should be as a player. They don't know what their role should be. They don't know when they should be aggressive. They don't know when they should stay with those. They don't know what... That's exactly when actually, essentially what you do with structure there is you say, right, we have one guy who's more experienced and smarter than all of you. Let him make the decisions for most of you. And in fact, if you don't know what to do, just do what he says. Go on his timing. When he says go in, just do it. Don't even ask. Just do it. If you do that, by the way, that's why, even though I understand at the top level they've been scrutinized, people like Cadian, MSL, Alexi B, Snappy, you can see that these people have found a decent degree of success doing this. Like I always tell people, if structure didn't work at all, well, then you must literally consider that like North win over Astralis at that DreamHack. So that should be the greatest result of all time then, because how did he do it? Like, but the joke is his AWPer was himself, fucking MSL, a player we all think sucks normally, never mind with the AWP. So to me, it clearly does work. The question again is just, do you have the right personnel and what sort of team do you have? Because obviously I'm a fan of that style. Like Alexi's an obviously great example I've always fucked with over the years. I also think people don't appreciate, like, not everyone has Nico or Simple or fucking, you know, sometimes we have to make it work with lesser pieces.
I know. So the way I look at it, and it's in a world of ideas and theories, because I know in reality it isn't like that, but the perfect team in my mind is capable of doing the pendulum between these two extremes.
Yes.
And that is the best team in the world. That is the team that is going to have eras, that is going to have lands after lands after lands when you cannot really play them, which kind of happens to FaZe. We can also make the argument about the finals being lost, but they had a moment of time where if they were playing, there were 99% chance they were winning. Yes. That was just it. No matter where they were going from event to event. So the best teams in the world are capable of tapping into these two extremes of Counter-Strike. Although I will also say, for the fans out there watching the game, they have to realize that it's not like round number six starts and at the start of round number six, IGL says tactic, and then it's going to be tactic until the end of that round number six. Within the round, there are sometimes changes being made, like spontaneous changes. Okay, we thought we were going to do this, but someone has a move, someone has a play. So we burst right open the strategies, and then we move into like immediate sort of feedback loop decision-making, and then we go into spontaneity. That happens. The same way around, sometimes you start around a bit more classic, and then your IGL says, okay, guys, I got something. Like, I got something, get ready. 50 seconds, we're going to do this. And then you do this little back and forth between being loose and being strategic. The best teams in the world can do both. And it's not just about the leader. It's also about the players being able to thrive and sort of take that responsibility when that is needed. Like, you can be a leader and you can say, listen, guys, in key moments of the game, I'm going to allow you to come in with like ideas. If you see something in the defense, just let me know. If you want to make a move, just let me know. If then during the semifinal of an event, your star player doesn't do that, then why did you train and practice all the way to get to that point where suddenly that input doesn't come in anymore? And then you have to make up for that. So I don't really see it as just this is the sole leader's job to make that work. I think it is a team effort. But I do think that the best teams in the world are capable of doing both. And this truly is where, for me, the true and quintessential skill of an IGL lies, is the ability to decide where on the continuum are we during the game. Because people need to understand that you cannot be an IGL at the top level, play a best of five, and have to call a strategy from round one to round 24 for five maps in the best of five. You cannot. Cognitively speaking, it's too exhausting. Emotionally speaking, it's too tiring. You have your own game that you need to play on. This is also why, by the way, some of the leaders sometimes disappear in these games because they get just overburdened mentally. You have Chopper just going 2 kills in a map. You have Apex going 3 kills in a map. Kerrigan going 3 kills in a map because they're overburdened cognitively. They have too much to do. So you cannot do that. You cannot just call the perfect strategy from round 1 to 24 every map. You have to be able to rely on a little bit of loose Counter-Strike. You have to rely on your teammates coming in with inputs. You have to rely on them making right decisions. And this is where the real good teams have consistency of result over a whole season and not just like a flash. And this is where people are now starting to notice that Spirit is an excellent team. Yes. Because turns out it's not just, hey, don't have some fun, frack some people. No, it was never like that. And now time is proving it. Because event after event after event, they keep being strong and they keep being able to go from a loosey-goosey round based on frag-refrag rhythm to then an absolute execute at 40 seconds left. They are capable of doing it the way FaZe was capable of doing it, the way Vitality sometimes is on the T side. And so to answer your question, like strategy versus loose style, it's much more complex than that. And that's also what makes CS so great, by the way. Like, that's one of the biggest richness that we have in our game.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the best way to describe the idea of like when you use structure to make up for inexperience or players who don't have agency is that famous saying, which I've always thought was a brilliant one, which goes that it's better to have 5 players in a Counter-Strike context, better to have 5 players follow a bad plan than each person follow their own plan, or like 2 people have a good plan and 3 people have a bad one. Like, one of the primary factors I've always thought is underrated about Counter-Strike is it's not even just like a tactic, star player. It's also coherence. Like, well, probably the number one thing Counter-Strike is about is execution. Like, I always think that's the part that's missed about Astralis being the GOATs. They actually weren't the GOATs, guys, because of the players. Like, even though, look, yes, you can't really replace Device, really, you know, like, but it's not like it was Device's, like, the way he hit the shot that made them the best. It was things like the fact that they seemed like they read each other's minds and they were always in the right place, and then they would do like a 2-man move together where I'm almost certain if you had the comms, they didn't make like an overt call. They just sort of both understood the way we play CS. This is where you look, and now this is why I'm covering here, and they understood the protocols. Like, execution's what made those the GOATs. Like, that was probably the best team ever executing. And by the way, I can tell you one thing I've fought very hard since they broke up to make people aware of, is people act like they were only the structure team with that thing. As you said, Maniac, they were a team that could, the joke with them is they in rounds could flip that switch. In the same round, if they knew, like, they could clearly, by the way, just cancel an attack and have, like, you know, fucking Device go and get a 3K or make us do some crazy flags. They could do all sorts of shit, that team. Yeah, definitely. And another little angle I'll throw in as well is, it's actually why I also think, even in the looser teams, that there's that classic problem where the secondary caller, Yekinda, Cold Zero, Nico, wants to be the IGL eventually. You know what mistake they're making? It's actually quite a subtle one. It's not the idea that they're a bad IGL. Maybe actually they're all right. Look, there is the classic thing of they always do misunderstand that it's different to make 3 calls in a round than all 12 on the half. Like, you very quickly realise that, by the way, like 2 months in, no matter how good the team is. But the bigger issue I also think they don't think through is this, Maniac. It's quite a subtle one. Is that when they were the secondary caller and the IGL did his call and eventually got to a round where they had a better idea, what they're not thinking through is this, Maniac. They don't have themselves giving themselves extra calls either. Mm. They get to the round where they need someone, but they used to be that guy and they don't have him. Often they don't think to have someone else do that. So they then get to that round. And the point is, not only are they trying to now, in this analogy, not only is Nico trying to be as good as Carrigan, he doesn't have Nico giving him the secondary call. So that is actually an underrated detail too. Like, again, I agree with you, Mick. It's not just the IGL. Like, it's other people have agency too.
I think it's a great example. It's a great angle to go about it because a team is always like a system.
Yes.
A team is a system. And just because you take one part and you move it to a different position doesn't mean you suddenly have the same system, just different positions. No. It changes the whole dynamic, right? So that's why I never really look at a team's failure and I just say, oh, this is solely on the IGL. He had it all wrong. He's a catastrophe. Like, no, this is also about, okay, so what did that team need in terms of players and personalities and roles for this to work, for this play style to work? And I do think, like, the people very, very strongly underestimate how hard it is to be consistent and loose in Counter-Strike. It is the hardest thing ever to be. Because so when it works and you see a team in flow state and it feels like they're just calling on the fly and having a good time, it looks effortless. Like, it looks smooth and effortless and everyone's having a good time and all the post-plan situations go their way and everyone is hitting their shots and it's great and it's awesome to watch. But like, in reality, when you play match after match after match after match, the probability that all of these elements going in your favor will always line up gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then when that's not the case, this is where you actually need to have the scaffolding you were talking about to just help the team get back there. And if you think about it, that's what teams are really, really, like, the best, most elite teams are capable of doing that. They are capable of digging themselves out of a hole during a game because they have some serious legwork they've put in, just like the same way you hit the treadmill for like the off season before you go and run on the pitch again, because if you don't have the stamina, the endurance, you're not going to be able to just run for 90 minutes all of a sudden. So because they've done all of this like treadmill work and the deep work, when they are in the trenches, suddenly they can dig themselves out of it. They can shake up the rust or whatever, the anger, the upsetness, the emotional stand they're in, and then they can play loose again. But they're capable of doing that thing. The teams that are just dreaming about a world where you can play loosey-goosey and whatever, they find themselves in a hole and then they realize they have no safety net. And then it's nothing but a crash because they don't have the actual work that's behind it. They don't have the cohesion to make it for people being individually. That's what a system will do to you. A system will help you deal with the individual inconsistency that is inherent to Counter-Strike. And this is where a team like FaZe is so spectacular because they've had for so long such consistency out of so many different players that it would, the chances were higher than someone would actually pick up the slack than not. This was the incredible winning by committee of FaZe Clan. Like, FaZe Clan, even when they were winning in the last 2 years, FaZe Clan never had the best player in the world in their ranks. Never, ever at any point. Yeah. They had once Rops in the top three, and even that created some discussion about whether or not it was a real top three.
Yes, and but no one ever had him number one. I don't know anyone who ever had him.
No, exactly.
One.
Let's just say he was number one in CS2 for like 7 to 8 weeks. Yeah, fair enough. After that, it wasn't the case anymore. So FaZe actually never really had the actual undisputed best player in the world. That doesn't mean they weren't dominating at a time. Like, that's not what this was about. This was about committee, not in the sense of they don't have superstar, but they have so many different players that could step it up and could dig themselves out of a bad situation that the just probabilities were higher for them to do it. And this is the true miracle of that team and why I've always loved to watch them play. It's like, it's hard to play loose Counter-Strike. Holy hell, it's hard. Like, having fun in theory, yeah, that's great. But if you actually are result-oriented and you want to win continuously and consistently, you want to play loosey-goosey, holy hell, it's hard.
I thought one thing we could talk about now that'd be fun then, because as you say, I actually agree, by the way. I think what's funny is people are going to make the mistake of thinking that because they think all the top teams, because FaZe do it, Vitality do use the loose style. I think they're going to make the mistake of thinking Spirit does because Doc just runs in and kills everyone. It's like, bro, Spirit is definitely way more on that Astralis thing of like, by default, they're clearly playing off structure in the playbook. And then maybe, you know, you're allowing superstar players to make some calls. Yeah, but like one of the things I wanted to talk about is this angle, Maniac. So if people watched the last tournament, Blast, right, at the end of this season, one of the storylines, and it absolutely was a storyline, is if Donk hadn't gone mad on those last few maps, Shiro definitely would have been the MVP of that tournament. Like, he was the one who was having an amazing event. His numbers were bonkers. He was actually even, like, obviously winning them games when Donk wasn't as good against Vitality, etc. Like, he was at a really high level, and there's a world where he could have left this tournament with the MVP. Like, I think it was even still a choice you could make in the final. It just depends how much you value the final. And obviously, like, with big names, people do care a lot about the final. It's the last memory Mourinho mind, all that jazz. But what I want to get to is this. I feel like the problem Shearer's had, it's a good problem to have, is because he plays with Donk, right? I used to use this analogy back in the day, but funnily enough, this shows how Donk is just absurdly unusual outlier, is I always used to say back in the day, the guy I felt the most sorry for in CS was Fur from SK Gaming, because he could play like the best entry tournament you've ever seen. But because Caldera is the closer and gets like guaranteed numbers because of his playing style, if you, the better tournament Fur has, in almost all cases, he's just helping Caldera win the MVP. And it's like, except for that one ECS where you just like, you actually had like a 0.8 KPR while entering, aside from like the miracle tournament, like essentially he got to win a lot of trophies, but he didn't win many, essentially all the MVPs went to that guy. Now, it's actually a different dynamic. Also, by the way, CS2, a bit more of an aggressive game, T-side. The joke in this team is, she rolls the Caldera in terms of passivity, but actually his problem is, if he plays awesome, Donk's just going to win all the MVPs. So I actually feel like, low-key, since all this discussion's about Donk's, like, you know, in the race for number one in the year, I actually want to give Shiro his flowers, Maniac. I want us to do this, because I don't want anyone to think for a moment that Shiro is like a sidekick, mate, or like the, you know, that whole, like, he's the Robin to his Batman. Bro, this guy himself is like a top, what, five player in the world? This guy's, he's fucking really good. I mean, let's be real, right? Bearing in mind, actually, Zewu doesn't even op that much. He might even be like the best opera after him, honestly. Like, he's fucking really sick. I get that he's not what people want from a superstar player. I'd say I've talked about in past episodes with Device. People don't really fuck with like the safe AWPer or the one who, you know, takes the smart angles and doesn't go super aggressive. If people don't know, Shiro is even more the guy at the back in this team, like at least in the other team, right? Because to be fair, there's a difference, right? If I have Donk, I am having Donk go first every time. But in Cloud9, people remember it was like Nafani went most of the time. You had sometimes Axile, depending on what the map is, you know. It's obviously a different equation to work with them. But I actually think that's also, this is what I don't want people to do, Maniac. I don't want people to see Shiro playing maybe the best CS of his career and go, that's just because he plays with Donk. It's like, no, this is actually what we're supposed to do to stars. We're supposed to give them their best possible circumstances. And what I think is perfect is this. I actually think, if anything, that like, Shiro did whatever in Clara. Who knows how comfy he was? Who knows how much it was set up for him? I can't know, but I'll tell you what, this looks like his perfect setting. Because, mate, he really can be at the back all the time. But you've also got two players where there's no actual, like, clash. What's so brilliant is they play together. They have exactly, like, one is the most aggressive player of the game as a star, and one is maybe the most passive, but they've actually found a way to make that, like, a 1-2 punch. And I actually do think, for real, like, whoever came up with this, I know I have never bigged up, like, Halley and Chopper that much, but I'll give them this one piece of credit. Whichever one of them figured out that's the way we should play, we should have Donk do his crazy entry shit where everyone knows he kills two people or like 1.75 people, and then the guy trading him is Shiro. Whoever came up with that, you are a genius. Like, that is actually one of the best calls for structure I've ever seen, because that's what excites me, mate, is that, like, it's not just the Donk factor. Like, when I look at Zewu, everyone's complaining, is it Flames, is it Sphinx, is his like second star? Obviously you go and you look at Monacy, is Nico actually at the top level? Bro, in this team there's two stars are taking care of me. These two stars are fucking mega. They seem to fit together really well. And if they play their cards right, dude, they could just do this for 5 years. Like, I think Shiro himself is sick. I think he's getting undervalued, mate.
He absolutely is. And I think, unfortunately, it's a byproduct of like the fandom of like superstars and how we get sort of sucked in by the quasar that Donk is as an individual. And it's really hard to pull yourself away from that. But we actually had this argument on the desk at Blast with Bubsky, where his point was that even if Shiro had like pretty good numbers, he was a little too passive and he wasn't making plays happen enough. And I retorted, I said, I disagree. I actually think that Shiro right now finds himself in the best position he could ever dream for in terms of who he is as a player, what's his profile, what is needed from him. And so there's two angles on that one. The first angle is, if you are really paying attention to Spirit's game and like the really high intensity ones, you're starting to realize that there is a trend, there's a pattern in which Shiro saves them from failures.
Yes.
And then Donk will make the most out of the relatively easier round, and then he'll get himself back on track with a couple of multi-kills and he becomes a machine again. It happened against Vitality a couple times where it wasn't actually just Donk just wheeling Vitality into submission. It was actually Shiro playing incredible Counter-Strike, and then as soon as Spirit is back into sort of a leading position, then Donk is going to destroy whatsoever. So it's starting to happen already that if you really pay attention, it's not just about Shiro being a secondary cast in that team. No, actually, there are moments where he is the actual sort of front runner for that team in the way to the championship. So let's acknowledge that and not make it seem like it's just Donk always destroying everybody all the time, because I think it's making a disservice to Spirit. And the other angle, and I'm glad that you mentioned Device on that one, is that Nobody cares if Shiro is the best player in the world in order for Spirit to win. What matters is the adequacy between what he can bring to the table and what they need to win. And that's what matters. And this is why what Device was doing so incredibly well for Astralis at a time where no one could ever beat them was that within the system that they had built, the qualities that he had were a perfect match.
Yes.
And he would never give a stupid kill. He would always make the right choice. He would have an incredibly stable sort of punishing angles, holding AWP, move well, be clever. And that's what they needed. They didn't need... Astralis, when they were winning, didn't even need top level simple. If I can make the make this weird comparison, they didn't need simple top level. That's not who they needed in order to win. Like, they had a plan. Device knew how to follow that plan, and he was thriving in that role. Same can be said about Shiro. Like, you're telling me right now, do I think Monacy in isolation is a better opponent than Shiro? Yes. In isolation, I think Monacy is the best sniper there is in the game right now, and I don't believe anybody can hold a candle to him. But would I actually? If I could, would I snap my finger and change Monacy and Shiro in Spirit? No.
I
wouldn't. Yeah. I wouldn't. This would be a short-sighted decision.
Like I said about there being no clash, for all you know, there could be a clash with those two. Maybe Monacy would want more agency. Maybe he doesn't want to wait behind and trade. Yeah, I'm with you, mate.
Exactly. So this is what is so frightening about this duo of Donk and Shiro, is that it's like the yin and the yang, right? You have a very aggressive one that can be clever in late rounds, and then you have a passive, patient player but can actually pop off when that's needed, and then they sort of collaborate each other. I saw them in London, and I was just walking by. I wake up pretty early in general, and I was walking by breakfast, and I saw them. They were having breakfast together, both of them. They were talking. Obviously, I don't speak a speck of Russian. I've got no idea what they're talking about. But I'm just watching these two, and I'm thinking, holy shit. If there is like a bond that's forming in here, like, this could be one of the power duo of Counter-Strike for the next 5 to 6, 7 years to come. Like, if this duo actually just hold on tight to each other and they just make the whole team around them better over and over again, they will be undeniable as a duo, because they have such complementary skill sets to what they bring to the server, and they play so well off of each other. Holy shit, this is so beautiful. And I think it's massively underrated. Hey, I celebrate Donk. I like exceptionalism. I like individuals that defy the odds and the rules, and I will revel in what he can do. But do not underestimate what Shiro means to that team and how much he makes sense in what they need.
I also definitely agree with the point you made at the end there. You don't want it just to be that the in-game leader and coach have identified this synergy, this duo exists, that we, the fans, you really want the players to get it. Because I can tell you one thing, and everyone will have seen this in interviews, so they'll know what I'm referring to. That's not fake, by the way, where Get Right, he did it recently, goes out of his way, and Forrest does the same thing, to big up the other one, even though they don't play together anymore. They always understood, Maniac, exactly this concept, because actually they didn't start their careers together. So they understood once they got together, but it's the same concept. Don't know it. They're obviously on different ends of the passivity and aggressive scale. They're both fabulous players that never had any clash. And so what they understood quite early on wasn't just like, hey, we're winning. It's like, mate, we should just stay together. Like, if this works, like, why would we ever break this up? Look, maybe sometimes we might need a different IGL or small, but it'd be stupid to break this combo up though. And the reason why that is dope is because if you have that mentality, you can also get through if one of them has like 2 months, that's bad. You just get him kicked out the team. Because I can tell you in history, I do think that those combos are real. Like, I do think that eventually... Sometimes you don't need to say it, but I think eventually there's even a conversation behind the scenes if you're simple and you have electronic of like, mate, let's just, there's no point us breaking up. Maybe we might have to change players, but this works. Like, look, this fucking works to win. So I agree with you. I also think it's also cool when players can acknowledge that and they sort of get, because if you think about it, right, there's even an aspect that we can all relate to, which is, I think, another reason why when those combos don't have any like clash in terms of ego or role, that it works, is because since you have a different strength to me, Maniac, I can appreciate your strength, because I feel like in life, the hardest thing actually is when someone has a similar strength to you. Like if essentially, here's the example. It's an awkward one, but I'll give it anyway. If you want to go back in the day when Scream and Shox played together, the problem there is some overlap, you know what I mean? Like, maybe sometimes they would have been in the same spot or the same position, or one would be the one getting the frag. In that scenario, they might be friends and get along, but it's a lot easier if there's no clash in the game at all, and then we both fuck with each other. Then it's actually way easier to sort of be like, actually, what I appreciate about you is I'm like an entry player who got, but I love the way like you always take the right decision and you're so like careful and calculated. Meanwhile, if I'm Shiro, it's like, mate, this has made my life so much easier. Like I said before, I had Nefani running. Now I have you running. Everyone has to pay attention to you, all the attention on you. You're killing people. And then I'm what? Shooting the first guy who has 27 health first each time. I know exactly where he is. Like, if you get it, these guys... By the way, the reason why I also bring this up is this is even topical, because actually, all I'll tell you is this. Despite what you hear in interviews about the next two people I'm going to mention, don't worry, they'll always go out their way to make it sound like they love each other, Maniac. I can tell you right now, Again, I'm for it. I don't give a fuck. I'll say it. Elysian Twists do not get along like that maniac. Partly because there's a clash. They both might want certain spots to say, they both might want the resources. And I can tell you, the reason why this is really heartbreaking to me, Maniac, is I can tell you exactly what it is, because I have that memory like that. When Team Liquid first got really good with this squad in 2017, when they swapped out, Nitro became the IGL and they made Stanislaw just like a role player at the time, because that Stanislaw super team didn't work. They had that run where they had the Mykonos event, they went to the final, they had the ESL New York, they went to the final, played FaZe. I remember seeing that combo of Elysian Twist, and I told these guys at like an after party setting, like, this was how weird, because you're so young in your careers, but for real, you should literally like both understand, like, the best thing you could do is never break up with that player. Just whatever else happens in the team, eras can come and go, metas can change, it might be you might need an AWP, you might not need an AWP, you might need a better IGL, you might not, but if you can both understand, like, you're almost never going to get a teammate as good as this. Like, you're both so good that if you can play together, I even gave them the example of like a Get Right and Force, like, if you can do like 5+ years, I told them there's no limit to what you could win. You could win literally everything in this game. I mean, sadly, that didn't age well because they didn't win the fucking major, but they did get the Grand Slam. I always thought they were mega together personally. So I always think it's sad when that doesn't work though, mate, and people do just break up and you always wonder what if, you know?
I'm right with you. And listen, I don't mean to be philosophical. It's a bit of a different episode, so fuck it. I'll just do it.
It's the off season.
You know,
come on.
Just fucking do it. You know, So I think, and this is where you can never really force a match. And the only way two people in Counter-Strike, these two players, will ever have a Forest Get Right relationship, or what could be a Donk Shiro relationship, the only way this actually works is if there is a compatibility of what both these individuals imagine to be their perfect setting. And that works. And this is how it works. Because let's just play pretend, let's speculate, let's imagine that what Shiro actually wants is to be the superstar. Like, he wants to be the number one.
He wants to be Monacy.
Maybe he wants to be Monacy. Maybe he wants to be Simple. Right. Maybe he grew up looking at these people and thinking, oh my God, what I want to do is I want to have MVPs all over my shelf. I want to win everything. I want to be the greatest of all time. I guarantee you it would be harder for him to fulfill all of the roles that are needed from him now that he's got Donk by his side, who's obviously just by the virtue of the Counter-Strike they play as well, is going to have a whole lot of spotlight on him, get MVPs, probably rack them up here, left, right, and center. It's the same thing for Donk. What if Donk just said, hey, I don't want to share any of that spotlight. I want to be the best wherever I am. I don't want anyone to threaten me and my domination as a player. If these had such mentality and such like inherent motivation, intrinsic motivation, this wouldn't work. But the beauty in the way this can actually work is that maybe, just maybe, they are exactly what they need out of the other in that situation. And that works perfectly. Shiro is maybe just like a fish in the ocean, just feeling like now he can close games because that's what he's good at. He's got that killer instinct in the clutches. He doesn't have to go out of his way for weird entries he doesn't really like. He gets to trade. He gets to use his mind and being so stable in these moments. That's how he thrives. That's how he loves Counter-Strike. And Donk doesn't have to worry about whether or not he's going to die when he just runs amok and takes duels, because that's how I love to play Counter-Strike. I want to fight. Send me in. But I know if I mess it up or if I just get one and I get traded, I have Shiro behind me. And that's great. And that is the beauty of a match that you cannot force. So if you go to Twist and Leash at an after party and you tell them, listen, guys, I think you guys have an incredible composition. You guys should probably stick with each other the whole way. If they actually have conflicting intrinsic goals or vision of what their happiness is going to be, it is not going to work. And you can apply this advice to Counter-Strike, to life, to whatever you want to have a look at. This is it. Like, the only way this works is if there's an actual intrinsic compatibility of what these individuals want. And I think this is what's happening with Shiro and Donk. I think it's what's come through on the server. And it's kind of great to watch. It's kind of wholesome.
Another thing as well, by the way, I agree with you. In the same way, as I said earlier, someone can try and diminish Shiro. Look, I'll imply, I think Bobski, he wasn't doing it to like fuck it, but I think his take almost is slightly like that, sort of like, don't overrate Shiro because he's got these things here. I'd say I would flip it on the dynamic and go, and so does Donk. Because as you said there, Maniac, one thing people are underestimating about the revolution Donk's causing, and I do think part of it is the fact that the game is massively T-sided, and the AK is like, the joke is the most powerful fucking gun in the game again, like, because of the price point and how great the first bullet is. So in a world where Donk is the best player, which it looks like when he's like fragging out, bro, he's one of the only stars we've ever had in Counter-Strike who looks like he's never in a clutch, because he's always the first fucking guy in. Like, he has insane like entry opening usage. And the point is, He, even if he kills three people, he then dies. Like, that's just logically the way it goes. So you're right. In his team, the closer is Shiro. Shiro's actually the guy. By the way, Shiro probably, bear in mind, I think here's the problem, Maniac. People always have an issue with this. When you say clutch, people immediately think things like, how do you do in the major playoffs? Because that's like a one sense of being clutch, right? I think that's being clutch under pressure. If you want to say clutch in the sense of your inner clutch, Shiro's a very good clutch player. He certainly has had his issues at majors, so it's a bigger issue of like, does he keep his nerve? But if you want to ask again, if you could have Donk, and if even if Donk opened the round with two kills every single time, which is impossible, you'd lose a lot of these games if you didn't have people who could win the clutches. It's not just Zontix. I think Shiro also, I know. That closing aspect does help. That completes him as a player in a way, yeah.
Absolutely. And I want to also add that it goes beyond just when we say clutch. I'm not just talking about 1v1, 1v2, 1v3, and just putting Shiro in isolation. I am talking about the sense of security that I have watching a 2v2 unfold, knowing that Shiro is in the clutch. And like knowing right. that he is almost irremediably going to make the right decision, not yes. give away a stupid kill, just play the timing when he has to, yep. play off of his... That's
what it's very device-esque, isn't it? Well, you know what I mean by that? Because I think exactly. people did the same thing they did to Device Maniac. I think people initially just read it as like cowardice. But I agree with you. Like, mate, the guy always never puts a foot wrong in a clutch. He's always got the off angle. He's always holding it for the first kill. He's brilliant, isn't he?
And it's also, I think, so you have players who are creative and can sort of finagle their way out of 1v2s and 1v3s. That exists. That's a skill set in and of itself to be so creative within the game. Some individuals can, very, very specifically and particularly. But it is something else to be like a closer, like to be a very good 2v2 player, to be a very good 3v3 player. Yes. Because that requires not only the ability of making the right decision yourself, but you also have to have super efficient communication. You have to have good map reading. You need to be able to analyze what's coming from your teammates. No, make the right call. That's why we generally, and Donk is the exception that you were noticing right here, we generally want the stronger player to be alive at the end because yes. it is one of the most taxing moments. You want Zaiwoo to be in a 2v2. You want Nico and Monesi to be in a 2v2. You want Shiro to be in a 2v2. These are the moments that are the most taxing for players to actually perform under because of how many decisions they have to make and how intense the time is. And this is where I think Shiro is excellent. I'm not going to say he's the best 1vx player, that is, because I don't think that statement is true. But if I ever had to have someone out of a 2v2 or a 3v3, I want Shiro to be in there. And funnily enough, I probably want Zontix too, because I think he's already starting to show that he's got that mentality of, I have to make that move in order yeah. for the clutch to go our way, so I will make that move. Maybe I fail, maybe it doesn't work, but there is one way I win this clutch, and it's by crossing that smoke, so here I go. And he's got that instinct already, so Spirit have a pretty incredible cast of players who can late round make good moves, which allows Donk to just be Donk. And that's goddamn phenomenal for him.
By the way, I'm with you on the Zontix angle. Right? The problem is, obviously, he isn't on the level of Shiro and fucking Donk. So I'm not making it like it's like a trio of superstars. No, what I actually think is brilliant is because not only are your two stars, I've just said they might be top five players in the world, so already you've got insane firepower, but also they have no overlap, so they're also like totally able to be masterful in their roles. The best thing about Zontix is, he doesn't even have to be a big fragger. He's not a bad fragger, by the way. I do think people take that angle where, like, I saw there's that Reddit thing people did where they love to do that thing where they're all like, you just shoot him in the body, not the head. It's like, by the way, guys, the headshot in Counter-Strike might be the most overrated thing in the whole game because even people who watch CS, but especially people who don't, think it's all about shooting people in the head. It really isn't. Like, I've always given this example. Get Right is a very skilled player, but 90% of his clips are just him shooting people in the body. But no one could stop the guy. He was unbeatable. Mm. He was still a god. So look, Zontix isn't a superstar to me. He's not. I don't think he's even a star player. But I'll tell you what, I agree with you. His actual like skill set is very defined though, and it also plugs into this team. Again, if I'm also in a team, Maniac, where I need people after Donk's made his move to do things like clean up around, make smart decisions, play off each other. Like this guy doesn't have mad skills, but I'll tell you what, his decision making's pretty good. It's yeah. why actually I also think, Maniac, here's like a bit of a weird angle I've just come up with now. It's actually why I also think he has had those lands where he just flat out failed. Because his problem is this, mate. When your skill is like decision making and timing and stuff like that, if that isn't on, if he's not feeling it that day, he doesn't have the crazy skills to just get 15 kills out of nowhere. He's not going to just like, you know, frag himself into a game. If this guy doesn't have his feel on, if he's nervous, if something's getting to him, it's going to affect his game. But I think those few tournaments, like the major where he did badly in Katowice, not Katowice, the fucking whatever, the RMR or whatever it was, the few times he's done badly, dude, I feel like people turn on him so hard. Like people want this guy like kicked out the team. Like, again, mate, I would not touch this roster whatsoever. Like, I'm even with you. What's crazy is this is the compliment I will pay to the construction of Spirit. So I'm not implying it's just Dong. I'm with you, Maniac, even though it's mad, because right now I do think Morrissey is the best player in the world. In fact, I actually think he is one of those players who he has a trajectory himself, like, to be a simple or to be the best ever. But I'll tell you what, I actually wouldn't make that trade either, mate. If you told me straight up one for one trade, you can get Morrissey, I have to get Shiro. Dude, I wouldn't do it. I know a fan would just go, what are you talking about? No, because I'm giving up. Like, that's the ultimate fucking, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, as we say, Maniac. Like, you don't know that you would even get the Morrissey you're dreaming of. The Shiro I've got now, I'm holding, mate. Like, that's like having fucking 18 in blackjack. I'll stand on that. You could still get a 21 and beat me. I'll just fucking take my chances, mate. I like my chances of winning this one. You know what I mean? Like, I've got a pretty good fucking hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you have to imagine how young these players are. Like, if you are the Spirit management, you have something so incredible. You have the golden goose. You have
it's fragile, though. Right, I'm with you. Yeah, you don't fuck with that. You just leave it as it is. Let them play. Let them play, mate.
Oh, my God. You let them just grow together. Yes. Like, maybe Shiro is, like, slightly more experienced. He's a bit older. He's seen a bit more of the world and the game, and that's fine. And I, when I look at them and I see how much he talks, and I'm sure he takes that space and that responsibility, too. But in actuality, the Dong, Shiro, Zontix, and I know Magix doesn't get a whole lot of love, and I do think he does a lot of the dirty work, and that in itself is probably worth a little bit of talk, but just the Zontix, Dong, Shiro is like a triangle that can go on.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And like Zontix is also, because I agree with you, and the reason I agree with you is, and it's not going to be like an indirect compliment, but I do think I as a player had similar features to Zontix, never to that level, God no.
Sure.
But I can empathize with the idea of, hey, there are games where I was so dialed in and that my main asset would be making decisions, reading the opponents, playing the clutch the right way because you're in the game. But then when that isn't the case and you have a deficit in just pure mechanical skills, just compared to the very, very, very top, then these are games that are rough to play. So if anything, the advice could be or would be to Zontix, like, hey, whatever you have as an instinct for the game, keep it, nurture it, let it grow. But let's put some hours into the groundwork. Like, let's get that aim going. Let's get maybe a step above, mechanically speaking, because what is he, 18?
He's really young as well, yes.
There's no way you look at Zontix and you say, oh, he's a finished product. Like, he is the best he's going to be.
Yes, he is 18. And people have to remember, just like Dong, he's barely played Landsmere. Yeah, he really hasn't got much experience. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, he's 18. Yes. So if you are in charge of that little project and that profile, you say, listen, what you have now is already incredible.
Yes.
Like, this what you're capable of doing now is beautiful. Let us together decide and work on a plan to improve what can be improved, to make you even more scary. And you're only 18. You're at the beginning of what is going to be an incredible journey. So if you're out there thinking you have to remove Zontix from Spirit, you don't understand Counter-Strike.
Yes.
You don't understand Counter-Strike, and you don't understand skill management. You don't understand career management. This would be such a short-sighted standpoint to just say, minus Zontix, plus Perfecto, better player maybe arguably as a role. Like, that would be so short-sighted. No one is saying Zontix is perfect. No one is saying Zontix is a top eight player in the world or a superstar. But what you already have is so serviceable to the team that just put the groundwork, put the legwork in to get the floor a little bit higher in terms of mechanical skills. And then he's going to be unstoppable already.
And like I said, because to me, your two stars are so fucking good. Like, if people don't know, if you want to see a number that will actually pop your brain, guys, it's not HLTV rating because it's calculated differently. It's not the normal ones. It's just go and look. Obviously, people think of Shiro, classically CT side AWPer, right? He's a mega CT side. Bro, this year, his kill to death number, Maniac, is like 1.6 on CT side or something. Like,
yeah. He doesn't die.
Do people understand how absurd that is? Like, that's actually fucking mental, mate. Like, and the reason I bring that up for CT side is that ain't Donk doing that. Donk's just sat down the line on the other part of the map watching those kills go. That just means basically, like, when you go to Shiro's fucking position, that is Shiro's position. You have to get that off him. He remember, CT's usually spawn map control. Like, that's a hard fucking battle right there, mate. So, yeah, on T side, you're worried about Donk wrecking you. But on CT side, it's fucking hard to get into Shiro's sight, mate. He's fucking, as we say as well, he doesn't do risks. Like, he's also going to just take the perfect line, I've always thought a thing about Shiro that's underrated is this as well, mate. His actual firing speed. You would expect him to be a Monacy guy and want to be like super loosey-goosey. He has... Normally, the people who play super safe are the guys who aren't like his insane flicks. That, you know, they're more like, I set my shot up. He like does that, but then he has insane firing speed too. Like, he's actually got a fabulous skill set. And on the Zontix one, I agree with you on the age one. Because there's the other thing that's mad underestimated. When you consider how inexperienced he is, but he's still sort of, by the way, he hasn't failed all the big tournaments. He's more like a coin flip. He's, you know, he's failed half the time. He's succeeded half the time. When you consider how young he is, dude, he could just get better and better and better right now. And then I'll add this in as well. As much as people will be like, yeah, but what about some of the big moments like the major when he failed? Right, I'll tell you a weird intangible aspect that's nothing to do with the game that suggests to me I don't have to worry that this guy's like a permanent chalker. He's going to ruin his career. People will have heard this story. It was referenced in interviews. Well, you know the reason why no one who's Ukrainian wants to play in Team Spirit? It's a Russian team, it's considered, because there's four Russian players. And I have heard, by the way, he does get hate in the scene in the CIS region for being Ukrainian and playing this team. People are sort of like, you're a traitor, or like, you know, why play with the Russians, or why not come to a, why not play in Navi? I don't know, he had the choice to play in Navi, but you know what I mean? Why not play in Monty or something like that, right? And I can tell you, this guy has sort of just ignored that, and he's just getting on with it. So that means already, from before I even saw him play a game, he was already dealing with some shit, and he's already having to like battle through that. And that means, by the way, all the great performances I've seen are in spite of that, like a young... Yeah. At the time, he would probably even have been 17. A 17-year-old kid's facing all this external pressure. People, by the way, people probably even hoping you fail as a result and hating on you. And he's come through it. So that suggests to me, actually, there's more to this guy. Like, I'll give a guy at that time to shore up some of his weaknesses, you know?
I'm going to add up on top of your last point about, like, how people, some people wishes you to fail. And that's just beyond the Russian-Ukraine angle, just in general.
Oh, sure.
Because he's had this... very stoic, in-your-face attitude in interviews. I think
it rubbed
people the wrong way.
People, as soon as he said he didn't think he'd get affected by pressure, everyone wanted him to. No,
exactly.
Course,
and then, and you know, what you do, just, and we all do it if we're not careful, but you look at this little kid having that kind of smack talk and you project your insecurities on him. Like, how dare he?
Yes.
Like, how dare he stand in the scene of Katowice saying, like, you know what, it's just a game. I just play my game. Your first instinct is to say, bullshit.
Yes.
Yes. You have a lot of pressure. You just don't want to admit it.
Sure.
And how, when you fail, it's like, ha, I got you.
Exactly.
You had pressure.
Exactly.
And it's my victory. But that's just because we can be petty and our ego is threatened and we want that to fail. Now, it's always hard to know to what extent players are truly genuine in interviews. There might be always a little bit of facade. It's part of the game. But I feel like what he's been able to do in terms of bouncing back from a sort of detrimental end of the major to now having this kind of performance in London already, he is kind of already building a body of work that suggests that he's not going to be a chalker permanently at events. He's already building like proof of concept that, hey, maybe I won't end up with plus 25 KD, but you can go back and watch that VOD and you're going to find 2 to 3 to 4 rounds where if I don't make that move, we don't win the game.
Yes.
And that is what we need from you. That's what they need from him. But I do think he put, unfortunately, because we are a very fragile being, he put a target on his back.
He
put a target on his back when he acted all cool being a 17, 18. Can you imagine how threatening it is for like these adults watching the game thinking, what is wrong with this little kid acting all tough? I hope he loses. Like, let's be honest.
We are all petty as fuck.
You guys are watching this vote, guys. You got to be honest with yourself. If you had a little bit of that in you, let's not lie to each other. And I think that's what happened a little bit with Zontix.
By the way, I'll even point out as well, it's even a bit hypocritical that we do that. Because, wait a minute, think of what the premise was that we're all saying. So we all tell a player like him, look, you're a young kid, you've never been on a big stage that kind of eats in, you know, a spore deck, it's different, you don't know what it's like, it's going to get to you. He goes, no, I don't think it will, I'm really confident. He goes out, it does get to him, and we go, ha, you suck. It's like, wait a minute, we told him that would happen. Wait, isn't that what we all said? We're all saying that he has to go through the early periods to get the clutch factor, like, which is it? Like, we can't then tell him, like, well, that also means you suck. Like, that's what we expected to happen. Like, if anything, he got away with it that one time at kind of eats it, so then we were even more hyped, like, oh, I hope this fucking guy fits in the fair. And then, yeah, the major when he failed. And also, the other thing that's fucking him is that that didn't happen to Donk, at least early on. Donk only had his failures in, like, matches that didn't really matter.
A little bit after that,
yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't, like, the biggest talk. So it also made it feel quite an unfair expectation, which is maybe no one does choke anymore. It's like, no, listen, that's why Donk is, like, a once-in-a-lifetime player, guys. Like, that's not what you should expect at all. It's not, reasonable at all. Oh, by the way, on that point you said earlier as well, that's all, I'll tie back to something that now is ancient history, but it's more relevant now. When you said that thing earlier, if I have a team, if I'm like the guys in making team spirit, or the general manager, the coach, the in-game leader, if I'm looking at the squad I've got, and like you say, it's mega, but it's quite delicately balanced. Like, these players haven't played together that long. At the moment, the dynamics work, but it's even one of those ones where maybe you even don't want to go on about it too much. You want to just let it work out. You don't want people to second-guess themselves, thinking about. Another thing I do think now, aged incredibly poorly, is that's why the dumbest move of the year was when Spirit called the bluff of letting Vertigo be that third map. Because, bro, this is what I always say. People act like it was... People make this mistake where they act like Carrigan wanted it to be Vertigo. No, you're missing the whole point. He wanted to get away with floating it twice. He wanted to not... And then he wanted them to ban it, and then he gets to go to a map that he doesn't mind, right? Actually, he wouldn't want you at the end to call the bluff. But the mistake was this. Because they understood what I've just reasoned out, Maniac, of like, well, we know at the end he also doesn't want to play Vertigo. The mistake they made was this. It's like, yes, but if anyone, guys, could handle you calling his bluff on a map he doesn't play, it's the guy with the team that the whole DNA of the team is like, we're just clutch no matter what. Meanwhile, your team, which is amazing on like five maps, there's just not really much upside to you taking that gamble, because as we just said, since your squad's so fragile, why put them in a position where they're uncomfortable? You know what I mean? Just put them on a normal... In this scenario, what you're supposed to do there is go, I see what you're doing there, Carrigan, but you're not going to fool me. And at the end, you go, we go to the last map anyway. By the way, if you win the series, you can even go cool float, but you know, it didn't work out well. I actually think the mistake was you took the most inexperienced core and put it against the most experienced core on a map both teams are uncomfortable on. I hope now people can look back and go, even though I can see what they were trying to do, I don't hate it. By the way, they almost won the game. But that aged quite poorly now. You look back now, it's just so obvious. You just let it play out on the other map, don't you?
It's just because the A type scenario for FaZe and Spirit is different. Like they don't all thrive in the same scenario.
Yes.
And in that note, I think it was very interesting to see like the development of Spirit on Dust 2. Because I think it tells a whole story about this team. Like they start playing Dust 2 and you watch them like the first time they play in Dallas, right? They got smacked by Vitality on Dust 2. Yeah, they got absolutely smacked. And you could actually be watching that game and be extremely critical and be like, what am I watching? Like they're not moving, they don't understand the timings, they're getting caught off guard. Like, what is this? This is pretty pedestrian level of Counter-Strike.
They got wrecked.
Oh, and then actually you show them, you see him rock up in London and it's like, oh, hold on.
Oh, they're mega on it by London. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, hold on a minute. Like something has changed. Like, and this is what they're made of. Like,
yes.
It's not just a la FaZe. Hey, you know what, guys? No matter the map, if we all get in that zone, it's going to be all right. We have such stronger like foundations. We're going to get our way out of this. We're going to have a couple of clutches. We're going to win. No. Spirit is about, okay, let's optimize this orbit. Let's think about it. Yes. Let's have a few setups that we use. Let's use them at the right time. The rematch against Vitality on Dust 2 in the semifinal is such a tell. Like the way they have learned from that moment, like how they have applied sort of the conclusions they draw from the loss in Dallas. And that's in a span of like 2 weeks. It's just a week and a half, not even. And they've already come to that point. They're that much stronger. So if that in itself is not enough for you. And by the way, they also beat Na'Vi on Dust 2 on the grand finals, just to complete the arch of we've learned on that map. If that doesn't tell you that they have a protocol and a way of working as a team that is extremely optimized, how they turn around that map, made like a weakness from then, we can play it against whoever and then we're going to be fine, then you're really not paying attention.
I've got a topic. Maybe this will be the last one. But are you ready? I'm going to allow you to do one of your favorite hobbies / pastimes, but it's not the one you think. It is going to be defending a Vitality player, but it's not Zwoo. It's not. That's to one side. Actually, the player I want you to defend is Apex, mate. And here's why. Because when I just did a show recently, I did a Snake and Banter episode with Richard Lewis. So the joke is it's basically like by the numbers, but Maui Snake gets to join, right? That's like the joke. Because anytime me and Richard talk, it just becomes by the numbers basically at that point in time. So on it, right, we do the point where I critique some of the Zwoo angle. And Richard says, because he's right, if you're looking at it just abstractly, he says, if you look at the squad they have in Vitality, because my problem essentially was this. It was my point on Snake and Banter. I picked as my ugly point, the way that people analyze the Vitality lineup, because I said I think a lot of Zwoo fans just spend their time trying to find a reason it's someone else's fault if the team loses. And the reason why I bring this up is because if you were to pause the world now and say, right, you're starting a Counter-Strike org, you can pick one whole lineup. You can't change it. You have to just pick one lineup. Bro, this Vitality would be like a top three choice, easy. Instantly, like you might, maybe you'd pick Spirit, maybe someone likes FaZe. Bro, Vitality's the next team out. You're not picking G2 over this squad. You're not picking VP over, you know what I mean? Like, it's still a very good roster of players. There's a lot of pieces here I can do a lot with. So Richard's point is, when you have a team with players as good as this, there's two people who are likely the problem if you're making it one person. It's either Ziwu, because he hasn't been the MVP and won you the game, or to him, it's Apex, because you have all these pieces and you're not winning the game. Here's my problem, Maniac. People might notice, I was very skeptical when Apex first became an IGL. And even actually, by the way, into the era, even when he had Megaskin Dupree, I thought maybe it's only French players that work with him, you know, who can know, right? Maybe he has to know people already for a long time. But the reason why I'm sort of sold is, because bro, the T side is easily the best part of Vitality. And actually, I do think his players are quite streaky. I think they're good players, but like Flames is the ultimate one. Sphinx is more just reliable. It's more actually consistent when he carries and when he doesn't. Flames is the one where I don't think even he knows on a map if he's going to go off if he isn't. Bear in mind, I'm working with these variables. Ziwu himself might be the best player in the world, or he might just be okay. Like, I actually think Apex does generally a pretty good job, mate. And if your problem is on CT side, right, despite what MBK might have implied years ago, the IGL has a little bit of say on CT side. Maybe he calls a set up or aggressive if we're doing a gamble stuff. But generally, like, players have to do it. Like, this is what I wanted to ask is this, Maniac, because I want to get your thoughts on this. One, I find it hard to, like, make Apex my critique on this team. I think there's so many other players I would look at and, like, individual things I could point to in a VOD. But I also think if we're looking at things like how do the roles work, how does CT side work, don't we also have to maybe reference the coach? I notice people never ask questions about Ekstaz. Like, I'd ask questions of him too, right? Shouldn't he be having input in some of these things? If this was Falcons, by the way, everyone would be saying Zonic's name a million times, right? We always factor it in. So what are your thoughts on this topic?
All right, so we're opening the can of worms.
Let's do it.
Let's have some fun.
It's the off-season, so why not? We've got time. Let's do it.
It's the off-season. let's try this time, because I think there are quite a few topics who are intertwined in that one. First thing first, I don't believe a leader should be designed responsible for the inconsistency of his players fundamentally.
Right.
Like, fundamentally, I don't think you can say, hey, Flamesy is having a good game here and then Flamesy has disappeared. Well, it must be Apex. Like, I think it's a shortcut. And so there is an inherent responsibility from the players to do whatever they need to do to be more consistent in what they bring to the table. Like, that's step one. The counter argument to that, and where I'm going to be doing a little bit of pendulum as well on these answers, is that it seems from the outside, because we don't always know exactly what's happening in the within of a team or the within works of a team, it seems from the outside that the amount of pressure and tension that is within the Vitality camp in these games is probably not the best way to get the most out of the profiles that you have. And this is a problem that I have, and which one I do think it lands at the feet of the leader mostly, because I think as a leader of a squad, you bear the responsibility of the environment in which you're playing. Not that you cannot allow yourself to be emotional, angry, upset and whatnot, but it is your duty to know, who am I playing with? How are they influenced by such and such and such? And thus, what kind of conditions am I putting out there? Because put it this way, if Flames fucks up grandiosely around, he just completely misplays it, and then you go and you bark at him, there is a very, very, very high chance Flamesy, being who he is right now, isn't going to be capable of making these like split-second decisions and call and have the courage to do them. So it's kind of an intricate conversation, because you look at it and say, but hold on a Maniac, that's Flames' responsibility. And I would say, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's also his responsibility to be able to deal with it. But what actually matters at the end is, like, again, the compatibility of the two profiles. You could have a player who wouldn't really mind like someone being agitated next to them and maybe just barking at them because they're a little bit angry, and they're gonna just keep going with their ways and they're gonna be fine. I don't think that's the case for Vitality. I think Apex has too much responsibility in different areas, which ultimately leads to his demise. Like, it feels like he has to not only be the shot callers at times, he has to be the one that organizes the CT moves. You can think about the fact that he arguably is one of the lowest skilled player of that team, still plays of the most instrumental roles on the CT side.
Yes.
Because he has the feeling, and he has been proven also by history, that he needed to be in these roles to make the calls, right?
Yes.
So I think what's happening mainly is that he's overburdened by responsibility. I think it's unhealthy, and I think that leads him to ultimately become a part of the problem. Because if you are then one of the instruments of the tension, then you are caught in the vicious cycle of, I am angry at my players for not making the plays they need to do, but they don't do it because I'm angry at them for not doing the plays they need to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's the snake that's eating its own tail. So I do think he bears responsibility in that, because as a leader, you have to take responsibility for the climate of the team you are in. And you have to be aware of the consequences it has on your players, and you have to be aware of, is there a way I can do things differently? How can I deal with my emotions and do it in a more efficient way so that my team produces better? That's part of his responsibility. But I also think it's reductionist to just say, oh, it's Apex and that's it. Hey, like, the other players are adults too. Like, they can also get their shit together and figure out what is it that we need to do better. But I don't think he is devoid of critiques. I think he has... you could really make an argument that now... With all of, and the reason I say that is because the most tragic losses of Vitality in 2024 haven't been games where I felt like the game plan was shit and they had the wrong ideas and they all sucked. These were games where you were witnessing an emotional meltdown of a team progressively that disappears into a series.
Yes.
So now, again, the point can be made that, hey, maybe Zai was a bit fragile mentally. Like, what the fuck does he disappear on map 3? And that's a very valid point. One I have no rebuttal for right now. But consider as well, if this is happening truly as a pattern all the time, then is there like a problem that's beneath what's going on, which explains why time after time in key moments, we liquefy as a team? And if that is the case, then I will look primarily towards the leader and the coach. And now we tie back to that conversation. Is Extaz a clever person and does he know his Counter-Strike? Yes, I know him on a personal level. We're not the biggest friends of all, but I know him. We talk. If we bump into each other at an event, we're going to share a little bit. We're going to talk about the team. I appreciate him a whole lot. I know he's a clever guy. I know he understands the game. But is he also now displaying an inability to have psychological impact over that squad? Yes. Yes, maybe that is a point that you can make now. Like, just as much as someone else with a different presence, and I'm speculating here, but maybe someone like Zonic could have like a stronger sort of impact as a character to just grab people and instill maybe a bit more either discipline or whatever it is the squad needs. It feels like Extaz isn't capable of providing what this squad needs in terms of like emotional and psychological frontier to thrive in. And I think some critiques lay at his feet too. So yeah, I think the Apex Extaz duo is not devoid of responsibility in what has happened to Vitality in 2024. They're not the only issue, but I'm not just going to free them from any wrongdoing.
Because on the Extaz angle, I would just put it this way. Try and see it from his perspective if you're thinking about Vitality, the team. If his career ends, you would look at this period and you wouldn't look at a lot of the aspects we're talking about. The first thing you'd say is, wait a minute, you had Zaywoo when he was supposed to be like the best player in the world and he didn't win the major. That would be the first thing you'd say. It'd be a reasonable thing to say, by the way. Any player, coach, that has like the greatest players of all time, it's a pretty valid thing to ask, like what's going on. And by the way, obviously the reason I'm referenced now, the reason why that's relevant is this guy also did have Nico Monacy when he had that G2 team, and that didn't go so well either. So it's not like he's had a perfect track record. He had the Zaywoo team and the Vitality squads. Those are pretty good. Then he's had some teams where it's been a bit more iffy. And on the Apex one, an interesting angle, I'll flip it back to you, is this. What Richard's point he made was, it was an interesting one, I certainly did think so, was it's a bit like a point I used to have about Cadian. So I'll make the Cadian point first. I used to actually think that a mistake Cadian made in Heroic was the fact that his style, his personal brand, was to be cocky and to trash talk and to tell Astralis, you know what, this next match is for all the marbles and all the bragging rights for years to come. Because Cadian likes that. He wants the fever pitch. He wants the drama. He wants to be shouting back and forth with Glaive or Divisive. The problem I always thought is this, though. I used to actually think, though, like, bro, the problem is, though, is that the vibe your teammates want? Because when I see some of them, they look a bit fragile on stage, mate. Like, they look like the players, like, that might put extra pressure on them. Like you know this principle. It's a principle from sports that people don't know. There's like an unwritten rule in team sports that, like, you don't trash talk the guy who doesn't play you in the game. He plays your, like, star player, because if he goes off, he's going to go off on your star player, not on you. You're not going to get scored on. He's going to go crazy on that guy. So it's like, you know, let that guy get in his own battles, basically. Like, he's deciding sort of the vibe for him and his opponent. So I always used to think the problem is, if you're someone like a Stoun who already had insane scrutiny that you're going to choke, Now everyone's going to meme on you. Like, it's like there's one thing. People are wanting you to fail as well as fail, and they're going to laugh at you too. So I always wondered, like, Katie and Bro, like, for you, that might be what gets you going. But maybe for them, it's too much. Like, I always even used to think the same thing, by the way. When he would do those speeches like it was a movie, people always ignore that they're not always universally good. That could also put too much pressure on you. Bro, what if right before a game, you're telling me all this shit about how you used to be 17 going to a LAN and now, you know, your whole life's passed before you. Bro, I'm like a kid. Maybe sometimes it's better to go the other way around. Hey, guys, we played a million games of CS. It's just another game of CS. Maybe you want to do the opposite. So the reason I bring that up is everyone, including me, loves the antics of fucking Apex on camera. We all do. We even love, by the way, the things he does in the dynamic of the team. Like, by the way, I think it's straight fire. Both sides, when he played in the group stage at Dallas and he did that thing to fucking Monacy, like, hey, mate, you're not simple, but that is straight. As banter, that is fucking God tier. And by the way, when Monacy then after the tournament, the court tweeted that and was like, yes, I am not simple. Also straight fire. Although I'll give you one little tip, Monacy, if you're listening. Your line just wasn't as good as his. What your line should have been, listen, write this down. This is what you should have said. And if you'd have said this, that tweet would have like 100K likes. You should have said, that's right, I'm better. If you'd have said that, my God, that would be like Conor McGregor shit. You know what I mean? Like, and by the way, if you're a pro and I like you, always available for ghostwriting. Hit me up on the DM. I'll give you some lines. Don't worry about it, you know. So that already is fire, right? Like, I love that for Apex. But I will say, Maniac, part of me does wonder, is that what Ziwu responds to? Because we have heard some anecdotes that go, you know, Ziwu was like dragging a bit, or he was playing a bit too unselfish, and X-Stars and Apex, the story goes, have sometimes said to Ziwu in matches, like, mate, we're going to lose the game if you don't, like, wake up soon, like, unless you fucking do something. Well, the problem with that is I don't know Ziwu as a person at Maniacs. I don't know, does he vibe with that? Like, I can tell you there's a certain type of player who maybe you should kick him up the arse. Maybe Simple was right, innocent. Maybe you do tell this kid, get your shit together, and then he wakes up. There's another type of player who maybe they need the opposite. Maybe you have to just tell them, like, you're the best player in the world, bro. Like, you're going to get it back. You maybe have to be like kid gloves. Like, you can never know, right? Because like I say, it's not that, like, in this case, I think both KD and Apex are doing the right style for them personally. The question just becomes, does it work for all your team?
You remember when we had an episode once where you and I, we dived into the topic of toxicity. And we talked about, like, the nuances behind toxicity and what it means and whether just shouting around and being mad is universally toxic or not. And, like, one of the concepts that I brought forward and we talked about was that what actually matters is to optimize your performances for the task at hand. Like, that's what it is supposed to be. So it's not just a question of, hey, is Apex problematic as who he is as a person? Like, dot, end of the sentence, in isolation. Because that is not what is currently happening. The question is, within that team, with these four other individuals, is it problematic because of the way they respond to that, because of the way maybe they would prefer the environment to be in, because of the way they could thrive in a different environment, a different ecosystem? That is actually the question, which is pretty hard for us to judge, because that would imply that we are within the team and we see them practice and we listen to them behave and all that. And every now and then we get to hear a bit about it. You get an interview, you get someone spitting the beans a little bit. And so you build a more clear picture. But we don't really know much about it. So what do? We look at how the team is playing. We look at the cams. We look at the results. And we infer that, oh, there seems to be an issue here. There seems to be tension. Seems to be problematic. Some people are disappearing. Based on that, I have a feeling that there is inadequacy between what makes Apex the leader that he is and maybe what his squads needs. And that's a problem. If there is inadequacy here, that is what's going to eventually drive you into the wall. The golden goal, or sort of the objective, is to find compatibility between, hey, this is who I am as a captain. That's the way I thrive. That's the way I'm going to push the guys. And have players around you that say, you know what? Yes, I vibe with this. Let's do it. Like, shout at me if I messed up. Like, kick me in my ass and it's going to be fine. Or some people might say, hey, guys, like, can we calm down a little bit? Like, could we get it in control? Can we have a more, I don't know, wholesome atmosphere? I don't even know. Not everybody responds the same way. Not everybody is going to be optimized the same way. And that's what the management has to figure out. That's what the coach has to figure out. Like, the players, even within themselves, have to figure out, hey, the way you are, and admittedly, I'm not going to say people can drastically change, but I think you can always adjust.
You can tweak. And yeah, you can tweak.
You can tweak, you can adjust. And if you want to have a very long career, you're going to be probably required to do that in some extent. So you can always adjust a little bit. But the fundamental question is, hey, the way you can thrive, is that compatible with me? Like, does that work for me? Do I feel like I can bring my best Counter-Strike? And now I feel like we've had a couple of examples where it it proves the opposite. Or at least, if it not doesn't prove the opposite, it builds a case for, hey, like, is there fundamentally something wrong the way the squad is behaving? Like, is that because it's happened not once, not twice, but three times at three different events in three different locations that the team disappeared? Is it only Apex's fault? No. That would be simplistic. That would be short-sighted. But I think that's enough to start posing the question.
I'll also say as well, since some of the things we're describing are obviously like social dynamics, communication, things that are outside of the server, they're not X's and O's on a demo where you just, you know, go there instead of a step over where you were, throw this flash a different line. Since it's not as simple as like just fit. I also think people have to be careful to understand it's the stakes that we're playing at. Well, the reason we're hyper scrutinizing this team is because they could win every tournament. So yes. To them, I do think Maniac, believe it or not, Vitality is one of those rare teams, a la FaZe Clan, where actually sometimes coming semis isn't success. Like for a normal team, that if you're Na'Vi, semis is a pretty good result. If you're this team, that could be failure because you know you could have won the tournament. You could have actually had all these trophies and lifted them all up. So I'll also say it's not as simple as like they have to fix this all perfectly. Like if we were describing, look, we're speculating about every team. For all we know in Team Spirit, they bloody argue, but they just win the game, so we don't know, it looks beautiful, right? So it's not the case, guys, that it has to be perfect. Like Apex doesn't have to have exactly the vibe for Zebu. Xtars doesn't have to have a perfect environment. It is the tweak. It only needs to be a little bit more, mate. These margins are very small. And if you watch the games, yes, Vitality can look messy sometimes. Bro, when you've got players of this talent, you can still win and have messy CS, guys. It doesn't always have to be flawless execution. It could also just be, you can also just frag them out the server. I've seen lots of Swedish teams do that and have holes all over the place in their game. They just won the game.
Yeah, so I agree with you, but I do think there is a trap in terms of like just cognitive bias in there, which is the trap would be for Apex or for Vitality's management to say, well, hey, we should be capable of winning anyways, so everything is fine. Like, this is the trap. And you got to be really careful with it. Like, yes, a dysfunctional team can win. That's true, because when you have such quality within the roster, hell, we've witnessed that at Pro League. When Zywoo, like, takes off to, like, extraterrestrial level, it doesn't really matter if there's any issue in the team. Yes. Like, he can just do that. And then Flames, he's kind of already proving, like, he's got an X factor to him. He's got already a few, like, reference maps where he takes over and he becomes uncontrollable. So this is where you have to kind of navigate that line. And it's a fine line to walk, because you have to say on one hand, just because we could have won doesn't mean we don't have issues. And on the other side, you have to say, just because we have issues doesn't mean we cannot win. And you have to walk that line, and it's really complicated. And that requires a truck ton of like self-reflectivity on like how we are as a team, what can we do differently, what can we do better. And you can lose yourself in either side of the coin. You can lose yourself in thinking, you know what, we should be able to win anyway. Why would I put myself in question so much? I look back at these games, I look back at a few clutches, and I say, if we had won that clutch, we wouldn't have won that game. Why are you pissing me off? Like, we could have won it. Look at this, look at the clutch we lost. We could have won that game. Yes, you're right. Yes, you're actually correct. You could have won that game. Does that mean there isn't anything under the surface that is problematic? No. That's not what it means. And it's very complicated sometimes in Counter-Strike to not be too result-oriented, because after all, we are defined by win or lose, champions or runner-up, group stage or playoffs. But I think the really, really strong teams are capable of going beyond that and say, okay, yeah, even if we could have won that game, like, let's have what have we done wrong here? What could we do better the next tournament? And that's a very mentally taxing exercise, but one that the elite teams are capable of doing.